Anyway, yeah, count us in.
Okay. Okay, welcome to 44 and 1. That's Tempest. He is the 44 in 44 and 1. I am G Bizzle, the ampersand in 44 and 1. And today we are going back to our trusty cards. Your options: the Cannibal's Quandary, the Nude Acquaintance, Euphoria Forever, the Courier, the Musical Reversal.
Have a bit more information about the first two.
The Cannibal's Quandary. You were in a plane crash in the Andes Mountains, and not unlike the people from the movie Alive. Or, I suppose, like the 1972 Uruguayan rugby team who experienced the situation in reality. As such, you will be forced to consume the human flesh of the people who died on impact. This will be a terrible experience, but it is the only way for you to survive. Fortunately, you did not know any of the victims personally. Would you rather eat a dead baby, or would you rather eat a dead elderly person? Would gender play a role in the selection process? And how much would it bother you if it turned out the meat was delicious?
According to cannibals, chickens taste like humans. So it would not bother me if they were delicious, because chicken is delicious. And if you have some seasoning to hand, you know.
Chicken's pretty bland, though. Like, chicken's all about the sauce, as far as I'm concerned.
True, true.
You'd be stuck in the mountains. Like, what sauce would you... You wouldn't have any sauce to, like, zhuzh it up.
Yeah. Maybe someone has some poutine.
Is the texture similar to chicken?
I imagine it is. It depends on what part you eat.
And I think it would depend if it was the baby or the elderly person. Because, like, the baby's meat would be very tender. It'd be like Kobe beef, right? Like, fatty and nicely marbled.
And yeah, and it might be tenderized quite nicely in the crash. Maybe minced a bit. So
I imagine an elderly person would have not as much meat on the bone. It would be like jerky.
Yeah. Well, okay, here's the answer then. Why are we bothering to pick whether it's elderly or babies? Why can't we have both? We can do what they did in Airplane. We can strip off the bits of the elderly people and make jerky out of it and let it cook in the sun on the snow. And then the babies, we could do like a nice spit roast.
That's true. You know, and then, like, what happens to all the middle-aged people? I mean, like, that would be a healthy balance. Like, if you had somebody like a 40-year-old average frame, then you'd have a nice balance of, like, you'd have nice cuts to choose from.
Yeah.
There'd be, like, the loin and the rump roast.
Especially if there was a rugby team on board, you know.
They would be mostly muscle. I think that would be grizzly.
Yeah, you think? Okay.
Yeah, it'd be like game meat.
Would it disturb you more if the babies were delicious or if the elderly were delicious?
I mean, I don't think I would be that disturbed because it's not like I ate rabbit once and it was delicious, but I don't start chasing rabbits around my backyard. So if it was, even if it was delicious, I would be like, that's a weird feeling that I enjoyed it. But like, if I saw a woman walking a baby in a pram, I wouldn't be like...
Baby back ribs. Finger looking good.
I think the baby would be easier. I think logistically, the baby would be easier.
We keep it in a little bag and carry it around with you.
Well, not only, where are we going? We got to conserve our energy. But I mean, like, I think it's going to sound talking about babies, but like, it would be easier to break down a baby like a chicken. Because the muscles are still a little soft. The bones aren't fully, like, some of them aren't even fully fused yet. Like, I think it would just be easier. And if you would presume, hopefully, that it's not like that some time has passed. It's not just like, oof, that crash was terrible.
Yeah.
Where's the baby? Right, like, you'd hope you're at the point of like weakness from hunger. So you want to take the path of least resistance, which would probably be the baby.
And that's where we would come into problems with eating middle-aged people, is that their bodies are a bit stronger, whereas with the elderly, you could just snap them apart, you know, you just blow on them, they'll fall over.
So then you'd have to start with the baby because it's easy, and then once you build your strength up from eating the babies, then you can start breaking down the middle-aged people and then save the elderly for
the jerky.
Like a hiking snack for like...
Yeah, I was about to say that.
It's the jerky.
Because at some point, like, if you got to the point where you've eaten the babies, you've eaten the middle-aged people, and then all you've got left is the elderly jerky, then you need to start thinking about hiking and getting out of those mountains because no one's coming for you.
Exactly. Because it's not like that's going to happen in a couple of days. Like, this is going to take time.
Yeah.
Would gender play a role?
Only in the sense that the places where women store their fat is probably nicer to eat than where men store their fat. I assume.
That makes sense. Like, I mean, morally or ethically, it doesn't make any difference to me. But like, if a woman who had big breasts, like that's a lot of.
Yeah, it's a lot of eating. Like,
that's what.
And hips as well. Like, that's all the best meat is going to be the thigh muscle and your backside.
So yeah.
That's the best stuff to eat. That's the prime nomins.
Prime filet?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, this, like, the stomach area, that would probably be overly fatty if it was somebody that had a bit more girth to them. That they wouldn't get a lot of meat out of that. It would just be fat. And then you could use that. You could use that to cook the other meat, because it needs to cook in fat. And if the other parts are lean, then you don't want it to dry out.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, and it might help the cooking the elderly a bit more if you save up all this middle-aged fat.
That's true. It's going to rehydrate the meat.
Yeah. And this is the stomach thing, like, is a good point about men, because men's fat stores between the organs in your torso and around your stomach. So, like, that's just not good eating. That's going to be horrible.
Yeah.
You know, whereas I imagine a woman's going to be like that Wagyu beef.
I think babies would be like Wagyu beef.
Yeah.
I think women would be more like a T-bone. Like, it can be tender if it's cooked properly, but then it could easily get tough.
Yeah.
And if you have like a soft middle-aged woman, like me, if it was me, then you'd have like a lot of good meat, good eating here. But there's a lot of good options. I think middle age is definitely the way to go.
Whereas like I've got like semi-double chin, big wobbly belly. That's just not going to be nice.
No, it won't be. Won't be flavorful.
No. So yeah, I'd rather eat you. And to be honest, if it comes to that point, say if one of us died in the airplane crash, I want to be the one to eat you. I will do that for you. And you can eat me. I'll reserve my body for you. And then you can do with it what you will.
Thirsty.
I know. I'm so nice. And I just think that there's, you know, we've got to be compassionate and understanding and sympathetic and care about each other. And we need to find light in these tragedies, which is why I offer my bread and my blood. That's a God joke.
Speaking of bread, right? If we're talking like sweet breads, because those are the, what's that, kidneys? I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know. I wouldn't. I'm not big on organ meats. Like, offal is not. Yeah. Yeah, no. So I'm not. I'm not good with that. So you can give that to somebody else. But I appreciate that if you were going to be the one to eat my bingo wings, that, you know, I trust that we're friends enough that you would take care in the cooking process so that it would be delicious. What would happen if, like, okay, so what if you're not the lone survivor, right? So you and like a handful of people survive, like the soccer team football team. And then because there were some people in that group who were like, no, we can't do this. This isn't right. What happens with those people? Would there be a discussion? Would there be vote, or would it just be like, you don't want to eat it, don't eat it, but
I'd be like, you do you, I'm doing me. I'm happy to have a discussion about it, but my survival's at stake, and or if I've come with friends or family or whatever, their survival is also at stake. I know how to survive in this situation. If you don't want to partake in that and you want to die, then that's your prerogative. I'll be eating you next.
Well, if they just go, that meat will be pretty fresh. So here's another question. Let's say there's 5 survivors. All of you have been traveling with family. So every option you have, obviously, is like family. How do you choose whose family member gets eaten first? Because the option is like your uncle or my uncle, like, we're going to eat your uncle because that's my family. But then you're going to be like, fuck that, we're going to eat your uncle because that's my family. Like, you choose whose family member to eat first.
Well, being a scientist, I will figure out BMI, even though that's a really poor method, but I'd figure out, like, I just do it empirically, like, who is the best eating? We want to eat them first to maximize nutritional value.
That's fair.
Yeah. But then everyone will hate me for it.
Well, I know, because if I knew, let's say there is an afterlife, right? And I was, you know, looking down from the clouds. And I was the one who you decided that collectively the group decided we're going to eat that. So, and I would be like, that's nice. Like, I would almost feel like warm and fuzzy that my death was not in vain, that it actually sustained some sort of life, that exactly. I was useful after death, right? Reduce, reuse, recycle. I always
say. And it is, like you say, recycling. The best thing that you can do for the environment is make mugs out of the skulls of your enemies, because it's never going to go off. You're always going to be able to use it, and it's sustainable.
Where I got this.
What is that?
It's a hidden talent I have. This is where I got this mug.
Is that one of your enemies?
My grade 3 bully.
I would believe that too. There's something not right about you.
I don't have any enemies that I know of or left.
Yeah, exactly. They're all gone now. That's why you've got all of that stuff in the background, is hiding all of the skulls behind them.
Each one is a voodoo doll, cleverly disguised as a Nightmare Before Christmas toy.
Here's a question for you then. Okay, and I think I know your answer is going to be the same as mine. Would you eat the humans before your own dogs?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Didn't even think about it.
Yeah. I would not eat my cats. I mean, first of all, cats aren't going to be nice to eat. But secondly, I don't know. I love them too much.
I know. I mean, if I had to, like, if that was all there was, I would.
Mm.
But the decision to eat a human would probably come probably 2 days earlier than the decision
to eat
my dog. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And the other thing is, like, if the dogs and cats survive the crash, they're actually going to be really helpful. They're going to be more helpful than most of those other buggers on the plane. They'll hunt
for
you.
Sure. Like, Gozer, I mean, Azul especially, because she's a prey dog, right? She's got terrier. She's got a strong prey drive. She would be able to track down anything that's there, that's alive. Mm. She would be able to track it down for us.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, humans can't do that. Well, humans these days can't do that. No.
But they could, like Azul, and she's got a very keen sense of smell. Gozer as well, but he's like a bull in a china shop. Like, he's not sleuthy or stealthy at all. Like, Azul can, like, get down low and, like, sneak up on a squirrel, where Gozer is just like, squirrel!
I want to play with it!
Azul actually got the end of a squirrel's tail once. Like, whenever she sees one, because she doesn't get the opportunity to, you know, track down prey. So if we see a squirrel, I kind of like let her get that moment, because I know if the squirrel's close to a tree, it's going to skitter up the tree before Zool can get there. Like, I have no, okay, it's probably shitty that I'm letting her intentionally scare a squirrel, but she's not going to kill it until one day. she got the jump on the squirrel, and like, so I saw her run after it. The squirrel takes off, but as the squirrel was running, I saw him do this. He got yanked back a little bit because she got a little bit of his tail. And then Zool looks at me and she's like, she got his hair first.
It wasn't as nice as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. And I was like, close, baby. Maybe next time.
No, next time is disgusting.
Like, she's a rat terrier. She's part rat terrier. And the reason they're called rat terrier is because I forget which president, but got into the White House, had a rat terrier, and that rat terrier, within the span of like hours, got rid of all the rats in the White House. Like, they've tested them, and like within, like, they could take out hundreds of rats in the matter of like hours. Like, they're highly efficient for rats. So we're camping a few years ago, and we had an old like pop-up camper. So as we're like raising the camper, I can see two mice inside the camper. So I was like, okay, gross. So we got the two mice out, and like, we kind of like released them into the wild. And so they were gone. And then we were fine, right? Like, mice are gone, everything's fine. And then it's the middle of the night, and the camper that we had had a bed on either side, and the beds were really small. So like Jerry would sleep in one and Zool and I would sleep in the other. And so Zool and I are in our bed and we start hearing, they're like, it's the baby mouse that we didn't know was in there. And then like, I look off the bed and like between the like counter and the bed is like this tiny little gap. So I see the mouse like running back and forth and I'm like, Zool, do your job. And she's doing this.
Oh, look how interesting that is.
I was like, the frick are you, what are you named for? So she didn't do shit. If it were proven that people had souls, would eating a person, would that change that decision for you?
Not at all, because I mean, at that point the soul's supposed to have left, right? You're dead.
That's true.
So did you know there's actually, they've done experiments, like really bad ones hundreds of years ago, trying to see how much a soul weighed.
I did know that.
Yeah.
Didn't they actually just not that long ago, like they tried to recreate that not that long ago, and like wasn't there after a few minutes after the moment of death, like the weight of the body decreased by a few ounces, and they were like, that's how much the soul weighs.
It's yeah, like, it's probably just
by the gas in their system.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. It's just all the gas leaving and all the fluids leaving the body. So yeah, I call bullshit on that.
There's a book I read. Oh fuck, what's it called? I can't remember. It's by Mary Roach. Was about all the potential things that could happen to your body after death. So it was like the different types of burials, the different types of and like new technologies and burials, like green burials and different types of things. And also one of the chapters that I found the most fascinating, I don't know where this came up from with souls. I can't remember why I brought us here, but we're here now. Is so people who donate their body to science or medicine, a lot of their family members actually renege on that because they assume that like, oh, Uncle Charlie's going to be used to cure cancer, but it's probably like, no, Uncle Charlie's going to get blown up to see what happens to like, to see the effects of, you know, shrapnel on a body. And like, people don't like that. They don't want to think that, they would rather you're saving a life than progressing science in any way. Yeah. So they pull back. I forget how we got here, but we're here now. I did order a new book today. Based on the article I sent you about how your cat would probably eat your body. They talked, the woman who wrote the article, she's a mortician who has written a series of books. And one of them is like that type of thing. Would your cat eat your body? What would happen with this? So yeah, that should be coming soon. I'm very excited.
That'd be interesting. I guess that kind of what influenced my choice to talk about the cannibal thing. You know, because I know my cats would eat my body. I mean, they've got to survive. I mean, if I'm dead, who's going to feed them?
Well, I've read an article, and I don't know how true it is, that your dogs would probably starve themselves before they would eat you. Where your cats, it's not because they love.
Oh, God. How heartbreaking was that thing I sent you about Napoleon Bonaparte? Oh my God.
But it's actually, like, there's so many stories of like dogs. Mm. Like, there's a dog who like sat by his owner's gravestone for days. Like,
well, like, you know, HMV, like the story of that. If you heard that one? His master's voice. So the symbol for the chain HMV. And it's got a dog sitting next to a gramophone. And and then it's because his master was like, I think it was a singer or something. I forget who it was. But whenever he was playing on the gramophone, he missed his master. So he would sit there and listen to him on the gramophone. That's where honestly, it's so heartbreaking.
I'm going to go hug my dogs now.
Yeah. And I just think that what I find really interesting about animals like dogs and cats and the way that we misunderstand them so much is that it's almost like an analogy for the way humans misunderstand each other. You know, we're talking offline about communication differences and the way that people talk to each other. And, you know, we see it online all the time as well. And you get it in friendships, relationships, work colleagues. And people make a lot of assumptions about what other people think and believe and their motivations when you can't possibly know. But you make a lot of these heuristic judgments.
And it happens a lot. I find it like TikTok, especially like that video I made recently. Yeah. I was the original. So the one that I stitched, the original creator says a very specific thing and other people are applying their own thoughts to it. Cause they're like, no, she meant this. It's like, she meant what she said, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You can't take it any other way.
Yeah. You're applying your, if you're so willing to like, oh, she meant this, why aren't you willing to say that I meant that? Like
exactly.
make mine fit your narrative, but it doesn't. So I think like cats and dogs are the same, right? Like when if I see Gozer or Zool behave in a certain way, I know that they're dogs and they're not behaving in a human way, but it's like, oh, look, it's cute. He's trying to talk to me because it's cute, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I know he's not, probably.
But it's all about, again, and you're completely right there, it's about your own intention behind doing it. And then it's kind of, you have that suspension of, suspension of disbelief whenever you engage with any form of media or entertainment. And we do that with our pets. So we can make a lot of the judgment because it helps us bond with our animals. But when you get some dumb fuck researcher make a journal article about how cats have psychopathy, and you're like, no, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, that can't happen. So I think for me, it's like, yeah, you know, people with that pets and stuff, it helps you bond with them. And it's fun to tell a story. It's fun to imagine and engage and make believe play. And you never know, they could be really doing what you think they're doing.
Unless, I mean, they can't use their words.
Yeah.
Don't you wish that people could, like, when Zool and Gozer meet another dog, instantly they know whether or not they like that dog, right? Like, they can see, like, there have been dogs they see across the street, and they're like, I don't like the cut of your jib, and they never want to meet that dog. And then others, they meet on the street, and they just kind of, like, sniff each other and walk away. Others, they sniff each other, and they immediately get into play mode. Mm. Wouldn't it be amazing if it were that quick for people, where you could just, like, meet somebody and be like, no. And then... not waste your time with them.
I have tried sniffing strangers' bottoms, but then I just get arrested and, you know, I'm on the register now, so.
Your motivations are totally different, though.
Oh.
I feel so bad for men because, like, there's really no physical signs of women in that way. Like, I remember in grade 9, they had this, like, in grade 9 health class, they showed this video, and it was this movie called Am I Normal? And it was like kids, teenagers working through all these different scenarios. And then they would end with, am I normal? And then like the adult would come in and explain what was happening to their body. So like the first time a girl gets a period, she's like, oh my God, I'm bleeding and I have cramps. Am I normal? And then it's like, yes, yes, Becky, you're very normal. What you're doing is it's called menstruation. And they would explain it. And like the best one was, this kid. He walks up to his friend at his locker and he was like, it's like, I just got a boner in gym class. And he looks at the camera, am I normal? And he's like, yes, Billy, you are. It was the best and the worst. It was terribly done. But
I remember once after rugby practice at school one day, one of the less popular kids, I mean, I wasn't popular at school. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that he was also unpopular. And he got a boner in the changing rooms. And oh my God, he did not live that down for the rest of school. For like 4 years, yeah.
See, that's why. Like, why did the men evolve it in that way? Like,
yeah.
With women, there's nothing.
Well, I tell you what, though, we were in like year 9 or 10, and then we had a like. So it was the age where, you know, girls' periods start happening and all that stuff. And then this one girl, like, we're in Spanish class, right? And then she had to go to the bathroom. And then when she got up, she wrapped her blazer around her. But when she kind of turned around, there's like a blood spat on the back of her dress, her school uniform. And everybody just saw it and ignored it because it's just, you know, it's embarrassing for her. But then my mate went, is that her period? And he's just like, Jesus, mate, what the fuck? And everyone had to go at him because it was just really rude. But it was nice that the class was that kind of type of people that made him to be the idiot rather than laughing.
I'm actually surprised because you'd think kids at that age, it would be very easy to be like, oh my God, I can't believe she got a period. And then like, by the end of the day, it would be over the entire school. They're like, oh, she got a period.
Yeah.
It was a big deal. And like, there have been so many, I don't know why like women have to be so embarrassed about their periods, because like every woman has a story, or not every, but most of a certain age, right? I think now it's very different. But like women of my generation, we were kind of taught that like you hide that stuff. So if you had to like go to the bathroom with a tampon or a pad, you were like hiding it in your boots. You were putting it in different places because you didn't want people to know. Whereas I think like my niece was telling me a story, or I read somewhere online, I heard a story from like a 15, 16 year old who was asking their teacher to go to the bathroom, and the teacher kept saying no. And then she was like, I have my period. Like, I need to go change my pad, and was just so blunt. And like, how awesome would it be if we could just like, yes, that is something that happens to young girls at a certain age, right? Physiologically, there's nothing you can do to prevent it. So like, let's take the shame away from it, so that if you see somebody with blood on her skirt, like that happened to me once when I was in school, like I had a blood stain and it was like, what are you gonna do? Right? Like this.
Yeah.
That happens. Luckily it was like a plaid kilt, so you couldn't really see it. So it was just kind of like, oh, now I gotta do fucking laundry later.
Yeah. I felt sorry for the girls at my school though, because we had the boys had the same uniform all year. Okay. But the girls had to have a winter uniform and a summer uniform. And the summer uniform was so shit. It had like the worst, like it was like a cream colored dress, but with a dark blue navy sort of leaf and branch pattern on it. And it was awful. There was no shape to it. They had to have it below the knee, and they had to wear like these crappy, they almost like combat belts that went around it. Yeah. It was the worst school uniform I've ever seen.
We had kilts, so girls could wear kilts or pants, but it wasn't like a summer winter thing. It was just whatever your preference was. And the kilts had to be around the knee, but then like there's always girls that would like just roll it up, so they would leave the house with it around their knee, and then they would roll it up to be like super short. But then there was always the guys who would like try to lift the kilt, so you had your gym shorts under your kilt and or your tights or whatever. It was just weird. The whole concept, I like the concept of school uniform because it takes,
it's an equalizer.
Yeah, it totally is. What I never liked about it is how the teachers in my school anyway treated it like they had swatches of material to compare against, like to make sure it was the right shade of gray pant.
Oh, fuck.
And yeah, and it was just like, how in the grand scheme of life, how the fuck does this matter? And they're like, well, when you get into the real world, like you have to adhere to a dress code. I'm like, but the dress code is not, it has to be.
Yeah. It's a lot fascist.
Like, you couldn't wear suede shoes because they're like, the shoes need to, you have to be able to polish your shoes. Can you polish suede shoes? It's like, why the fuck do you care? Like, I just teach me isosceles triangles and leave my fucking shoes alone. Like,
exactly.
What does it matter?
Me and the headmistress, we did not like each other, and it was very obvious. We would quite often butt heads, basically. So, you know, I showed you my picture of when I had the green hair, right? By the time school started up again, I'd managed to rinse it all out, and I just had basically just blonde tips by then, and my brown was growing back in. But by the time I went back to school, it was still quite blonde. And then I should just spike it up and go to school because, you know, I thought I was a cool punk rock kid, you know, that's what you did. Anyway, go to school late one day, and I'm signing in at the register to say I'm late because I was late every day. And the headmistress was there. And then she looked at my hair and starts shouting at me about my hair, literally shouting at me. And I went, Mrs. Oh, what's her name? podcast. But I was like, I don't think that's your real color. So why don't you leave me alone about mine? After school detention.
Yeah, I wonder why she didn't like you.
Another time, right? I was late for school, as I always am, had my Metallica hoodie on, and walked in the front door of the school. And went to sign the register, and there was a copper there. I was like, is that for me? Because, you know, like, I used to drink before school sometimes, and I thought it was for me. And so I got there. I thought, shit, I'm in real trouble this time. And the headmistress is there, again, started shouting. She was like, you would be late today, today of all days. I'm sick of your shit and all this stuff. And then the cops just standing there like, what is going on? And I found out from other people that the lab technician in the chemistry department had had a breakdown in the morning, and the chemistry teachers had come in, and to the teaching assistant was lobbing all of the glass and stuff, just smashing everything up and going mental. Yeah, yeah. And then the headmistress took out on me.
But like, of all days, like, you knew.
Yeah, I know. Like, I'm late every day. I'm always late to school.
And the things teachers focused on.
So to pull it all back around, over the last like half an hour, we have basically discussed all of the reasons why we would be quite happy to eat a person in a plane crash, because people are assholes.
Essentially. So remember I told you about that book, My Year of Living Biblically? Mm-hmm. So in it, so for anybody who doesn't remember, it's this guy follows every single rule in the Bible for a year. And then at the end of it, he starts talking about like what he learned, like if he learned, not so much what he learned, but yeah, I guess what he learned. So at the end of the book,
deep breath.
So he's wrapping it up and he's like, is this going to make me more religious or raise my children in a religious home? And he said, no, but what he took away from living a year biblically is the concept of gratitude. So it's not just like being thankful for the food that you have on your plate, but be thankful for the farmers who raised it and the truckers who got it to you and the store that sold it to you, like just an overwhelming sense of being gracious and grateful. Yeah. So if at the end of the day, we are going to eat the babies or eat the elderly, regardless of whom we choose to dine on, as long as we are thankful that, yeah, you know, they didn't give their lives in vain and they didn't go to waste and that they, exactly, because of them, other people get to live. We can be grateful in that. And I think it is ethically, morally a gray area at that point.
Yeah. 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 I think that's a good, you have to say it though.